Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome back
to the Flick Tricks Podcast.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Jane.
And how are you, Jane?
I'm good. And we are almost done with our bachelor's degrees.
That's so true.
Isn't that wild?
It doesn't feel like it.
No, it doesn't at all.
Especially since it's like, I feel like my bachelor's degree ended 2-3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Whenever the school said, stop coming here. And I was like, okay.
So we're about to finish that up in a couple of weeks. No graduation for us.
Nope.
But I'm going to dress up in my cap and gown and take a picture because I got my cap and gown.
Because we procured those. I mean, I don't have any of my cords because they lost them. Well, they didn't lose them. They thought I didn't qualify. And then I was like, but I have a 3.97 GPA. And they're like, are you sure? And I was like, yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, we'll take care of that. But then the school closed down. I don't know if I should email them and be like, hi, I know this is definitely not priority numero uno, but also, how do I get those? Because I do want them.
Definitely.
Like, do I just have to come back in the fall and get them? I mean, I can.
Yeah, that would suck, though.
I know. Also, like, mail them to me.
Yeah.
In a box, in a fancy box.
It's like in, have you seen Bridesmaids?
No. I know.
We have to watch that. Okay, how are you?
I'm good. My feet are so cold. I'm so cold all the time. I have a little space heater in this office that I use while I edit, and also this is my gaming PC. When I say gaming PC, that makes it sound really cool, but actually I've just played 60 hours of Stardew Valley. And so I come in here at night and I get so cold, I turn the little space heater on my feet.
Goodness.
Even though it's May, or it's April. It's the end of April and I like have to turn the space heater on because I get too cold.
That's so funny.
I know. And everyone comes in the room and they're like, it's so hot. And I'm like, no, it's not. I'm cold. So I also haven't worked in a while.
Yeah,
but
me either.
I start my new job.
That's so exciting.
May 4th, assuming that the world hasn't ended by then.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really sure how it's going to go. Because
me either.
We're planning on moving to Minnesota. Probably going to move in August 1st.
Mm.
So, we'll see. Because I have no idea how long this is going to
last. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, maybe your school will go to all online classes anyway.
Exactly.
And if that happens, I mean, hopefully they'll announce that before it's time for you to move.
So, true.
Because if they do, you can, like, hold on until it's, like, class time.
Definitely. Yeah, they mentioned that in the email. Wild.
Oh, they were like,
right now we're planning on having classes
in the fall.
But we will let you know if that changes.
Yeah, I've seen some classes are, like, some schools are already in talks to cancel fall 2020 classes.
Oh my gosh.
But I think it's until we have a vaccine.
Yeah.
Once we have a vaccine and everyone starts getting vaccinated and we go through that, like, 2-week period or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it'll be, like, finally over.
Agreed.
But I don't know. I don't know, though. It's going to be weird.
It's going to be very weird. Oh, the world right now.
Oh, the world. Oh, the world. Oh. I better get a job, because if I don't get unemployment.
Yeah, right?
Because my job was, like, technically seasonal since I worked at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was graduating, so I can't qualify for unemployment. So I stopped receiving a paycheck on May 7th. I start my new job maybe on May 4th.
Mm-hmm.
If I start on May 4th, no prob. That's like, okay, cool. But if it doesn't happen, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because I paid hourly.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Today we're covering the movie Sorry to Bother You.
Which, going into it,
did not really understand. I mean, we knew it was about, like, from the trailers.
Yeah.
We knew it was about, like, a guy, like, a black guy working at a call center who uses a white voice in order to make more sales and becomes very successful.
Yeah, that's basically what the trailer tells you.
We were like, interesting. It gets really interesting. It takes a lot of turns that I did not expect. I mean, when you're watching a movie, I'd say until about the halfway point, you track.
Yeah.
You track what's happening.
Yeah.
And then the halfway point hits and you're like, oh, no longer tracking.
No. It just goes off the grid.
I'm so cold. I'm turning on the heater. Let's see. I'm sorry if this makes a noise, everyone. I'm going to turn on to the medium setting. Even though I usually
have it. Space heater on.
Space heater on. Wikipedia article up.
Okay. Ready to record
ready
our
to
podcast.
Record our podcast. Which we've already been recording for 5 minutes. But. Okay. So. Okay. Plot. Cassius, Cass, Greek, Cash. Well, couldn't say Cassius and then Cash. Green lives in his uncle Sergio's garage with his girlfriend Detroit.
Played
an
by
artist.
Terry Crews, his uncle.
Amazing. Terry Crews, I love you. Call me. an artist. Struggling to pay rent, Cash gets a job as a telemarketer for Regal View. Already has a name that I hate because I hate the company Regal.
Yes. And this is set in an alternative reality, modern day LA.
Yes. So, Cash has trouble talking to customers until Langston, an older coworker, teaches him to use his white voice, at which Cash excels. His white voice is voiced by...
David Cross.
David Cross.
Who plays Tobias in Arrested Development, mm-hmm. and if you look him up, you will know who he is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's a pretty well-known character actor.
Yeah, if you don't recognize the name, you'll definitely know his face. Cash's coworker, Squeeze, forms a union and recruits Cash, Detroit, and their friend Sal. So yeah, they're gonna start a telemarketer union.
Yeah.
When Cash participates in a protest, he expects to be fired, but is instead promoted to an elite power caller position. The power callers are basically like telemarketers that make a lot of money.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
They have like this golden elevator that it's takes them to the top floor.
In the luxurious power caller suite, Cash is told to always use his white voice and learns that Regal View secretly sells arms and slave labor from the corporation worry-free. Though Cash is initially... Yeah, that sounds crazy, but it's just kind of normal.
It's just kind of normal in this universe. Worry-free is like this company that houses people and feeds them and stuff. It's kind of like group living.
Yeah, it's like a compound sort of, but imagine if it wasn't nice.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine if Walmart, like, ran a compound where you could, like, they'd feed you and they'd house you, but, like, you had to work for them unlimited hours. And imagine the kind of housing and food Walmart would give you if you signed that contract.
Very true.
Worry-free. Though Cash is initially uncomfortable with the job, he can now afford a new car and an apartment, and he pays off Sergio's house in the process of keeping him from joining Worry-free. So, essentially, Sergio was going to join Worry-free, and he was like, I'll pay for your house. And his own rent. Working long hours, he stops participating in the union push, and his relationship with Detroit deteriorates. When Cash crosses the union's picket line, one of the picketers hits him in the head with a can of soda. Footage of the incident becomes an internet meme.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, also, during the time, they're kind of, he and Detroit are, like, kind of falling apart. And she has this, they're not going to mention this in this, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
She has a art installation.
Yes.
Okay, also she and Cash break up because he crosses the picket line, basically.
Yeah, yeah, she basically tells him, like, if you cross that picket line, we're done.
Mm. And he does. So they break up. But then he comes to her art installation that she's been working on for a while. And she's, like, a very political artist, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, you find out that, like, she also does a white voice, like, a white character to sell her art to, like, white people.
Yeah, voiced by Lily James.
Yeah, so she has a white voice, too. But this is not a big deal. I think this should be a bigger deal in the movie than it is, but...
Yeah, they don't really mention it, just show it other
just
than showing us that
hypocrisy.
She has a white voice.
So she does the same thing that he does, and she's, like, mad at him for doing it. But then also Squeeze shows up, and Squeeze is, like, their colleague.
Played by the guy who plays Glenn.
Yeah, and the Walking
Steven
Dead.
Yen.
Yes. And you find out that they are, like, hooking up, basically.
Okay. Also, I think they're trying to make us think that this is the first time they're ever hooking up, but they do not kiss, like, some, like, people mm-hmm. who are just, like, starting to hook up.
No, and they've flirted for a while, too, like.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, Detroit seems much better with Squeeze, in my opinion, than
also,
with Cash.
Also, he has gonorrhea.
Yes, which we learn when he has a protest, and he's, like, chanting about things that they want to be fixed, and he mentions that he has gonorrhea, and everyone gets really quiet. but their relationship is basically deteriorating, and he ends up having to leave her art installation to go to this party at the guy that owns Worry Free, his house.
Played by Armie Hammer.
Yes. So Cash is invited to a party with Worry Free CEO Steve Lift, where he is goaded into rapping.
Oh, this is such a weird
scene. This is such a weird, weird,
basically, weird routine. Basically, they keep saying, like, rap, you're black, you can rap. Because they, basically, the guy's like, drop your white voice when you're here. We don't, like, you don't have to use that. And so he's talking like normal, and he's like, rap.
And he's like, I can't rap.
And everyone, he's like, I really can't rap. And they goad him into rapping, and so he just says, I can't say it because it's the N-word. But he basically just says the N-word over and over and over in, like, a pattern, and everyone chants it back.
It's terrible.
And it goes on for so long, and the only people that aren't chanting are, like, the CEO and also, like, his other black friend who works with him mm-hmm. as a power caller, who, like, basically is the person that recruited him to be a power caller.
Yeah.
It's so bad. It's so weird. It's kind of funny, though. You're like...
It was just bizarre.
It's like, this is what white people think rapping is.
Right.
That's basically, like, the joke. But, anyway, after that, the Worry-Free CEO likes him. Steve Lift likes him. So Lift offers Cash a powdered substance, which Cash snorts, believing it is cocaine. Looking for the bathroom, Cash discovers a shackled half-horse, half-human hybrid who begs him for help.
Okay. So...
This is a great scene.
This is a great scene. So as they're going down the corridor in the first place, all these doors are, like, different colors.
Yeah, but they're all basically green.
Yeah, they're all, like, different shades of green, except for the one that they go through, which is, like, red or whatever.
It's magenta.
Magenta. And so he says, go through the jade door. That's where the bathroom is.
And so he goes, okay. So he walks down the hall until he sees a door that is green. Yeah. And, which is all of them. And he goes through it. And it looks like a bathroom at first. Like, it kind of looks like a shower room.
Yeah.
And he ends up, like, going in, and he sees the stalls, and someone's in there, and he's like, oh, damn, man, I'm sorry, like, are you coming in, or are you coming out? And he's like, help me, and he's like, I can't help you, bro.
And he sounds totally normal.
Yeah, and he's like, I can't help you. But he ends up, like, opening the door.
And this naked half-horse, half-human thing falls out.
And he's, like, in pain.
It's
terrifying.
Terrifying.
They look horrible. Okay, we need to address this right now. The horses don't look good.
Mm-mm.
The computer-generated horses, they don't hold up.
No, they do not.
They didn't hold up in 2018 when the movie came out. Okay? Because, like, Avatar came out, you know, and it didn't look like this.
True.
It's ugly.
It's very upsetting to look
at. But also, part of me thinks it doesn't really matter.
No, I don't think it matters in the context.
It's kind of like in the Scooby-Doo 2 movie. No, I'm sorry. Scooby-Doo 1. Spooky Island.
Yes.
The scary monster creatures, they don't look good, but does it matter? Not really. It really doesn't, that really doesn't impede my enjoyment of the movie.
Not at all. Not at all.
If anything, kind of adds to it.
I think it adds to it for me.
And I think here, it's another one of those situations.
I agree.
It doesn't really matter what they look like.
No, it doesn't.
What matters is that I am disturbed.
I am shocked and disturbed.
So... Lift, okay, this is such a good part. He comes in and he's like, man, you're turning monsters. And he's like, hold on. First of all, it's not a sexual thing. He's like, let me explain. It's just for money.
I didn't want you to think I was weird.
Yeah, he literally, like, basically, like, what? It's not a sex thing. Don't think I'm weird. It's not a sex thing. He's like, I'm not keeping sex slaves. It's totally just for money. So... Lift explains.
It's the olive door.
Yeah. He gets mad. And he's like, I told you the jade door. And he's like, this is the jade door. And he's like, are you joking? That's clearly olive. I was like, oh, rich people. So, Lift explains that Worry Free plans to make their workers stronger and more obedient by transforming them into equisapiens. This transformation occurs when a human snorts a gene-modifying powder. Cash fears he snorted the substance, but Lift assures him it was just cocaine. Cash refuses a $100 million offer over 5 years to become an Equisapien and act as a false revolutionary figure to keep the employees in line. Yeah, so basically, he says, I'll give you... This is such a good scene, too. He's literally like, hold on, see what I'm offering you first. And he hands him a piece of paper that in Sharpie has written on it, $100 million, smiley face. Like,
not a check.
Not a check. Not something, like, usually they, like, don't show you. It literally just opens it and it's, like, in a child's handwriting. We will give you $100 million, smiley face. So funny. You hate Steve Lift, but you can't hate him.
It's very true. I think that I read that that's why the director cast him, because he's just such a likable looking guy.
So lovable. I was like, oh, this shucks, that scamp.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so basically they say, like, you get turned into an Equisapien for 5 years, and then you act like you're going to lead the revolution of Equisapiens, but really, you report back to work the whole time, so the Equisapiens learn to trust you, but also secretly you're working for us.
Yeah. He's a mole in the revolution of Equisapiens.
Which he starts. And they also describe him as the Equisapien Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
And he's like, but I work for you. And he's like, they're like, yeah, it's just, keep it simple. And then also some of the greatest lines in the whole film. He's like, obviously no. He's like, hold on. First of all, you get to make all this money or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, but second of all, and I want you to think about this one, you get a horse cock.
And I really want you to think about that.
And I really want you to think about that. Really funny. Mm. But Cash is like, no, I quit. So Cash discovers he dropped his phone when he encountered the Equisapien, who recorded a plea for help and sent it to Detroit's phone. To spread the video, Cash appears on the television shows, including the extremely popular I Got the Shit Kicked Out of Me, which is like a parody game show where people just come on and get the shit beat out of them.
Yep.
So that they can be on TV.
And then they also, like, swim through rivers of poop and pee.
Yeah. It's gross.
It's so weird.
So he comes on. Probably him swimming in poop is my least favorite part of this movie.
Oh, no, it's very
uncomfortable. I don't find that funny. He basically comes on so that he can show the video. So he endures humiliations and beatings to get the video played. The plan backfires. The Equisapiens are hailed as groundbreaking scientific achievements, and worry-free stock reaches an all-time high. Cash apologizes to Squeeze, Sal, and Detroit, and joins the union in a final stand against Regalview. Cash uses a security code from the Equisapiens video to break into Lyft's home. He goes to the picket line where the police start a riot and knock him out. The Equisapiens overpower the police and free Cash. Basically, also, his, like, getting hit in the head with the can has, like, become a meme, right? So he gets all the union people to basically dress up like him with the meme. And then they all, so basically they can't find Cash.
Yeah, because he has, like, this this towel wrapped around his head, basically. Yeah. Gauze or whatever.
Yeah.
That he never changes.
Yeah, it's really gross. But they basically overpower the police, but then in the end it gets really violent. And he gets knocked out. So, the Equisapiens overpower the police and free Cash. Detroit and Cash reconcile and move back into Sergio's apartment, but Cash starts to... Oh, yeah.
This but is then, so upsetting.
Cash starts to grow horse nostrils. Fully transformed, he leads a mob of Equisapiens to Lyft's house and breaks down the door. The end. And, okay, so Lyft told him that there was, like, a cure. So, yeah. I don't know if that's true.
No, it's never clear if that's true.
It's never clear. It sounds fake.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. We don't know.
We don't know. But the entire movie, we were like, we don't want to see him turn into a horse person.
But then it happened.
Then it happened and we audibly screamed.
The very last second, he turned into a horse person and I was so mad. And he becomes the real leader of the horse revolution.
He doesn't work for them.
But he was the leader of the horse revolution anyway.
It's a weird movie.
He was the leader of the horse revolution before he became a horse. It's very odd. He also continues to work for Regalview.
Yeah, he goes back to work for
they
them.
They let like him as just a regular telemarketer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And it's never addressed that we think that Squeeze gave
Detroit
gonorrhea.
Yeah.
And then she gave Cash gonorrhea.
It's hard to say, because it's like, she says that they did everything but.
But you can...
And you're like, but is that true?
Is that true?
I don't know. Why did they make such a point that he has gonorrhea?
I know, and then they'd never bring it up again.
If they were going to sleep together. I think she has gonorrhea.
I think so, too.
It's not good. Maybe she doesn't know she has it.
Maybe.
Sometimes gonorrhea is asymptomatic.
Well, it squeezes women. A jerk for doing that, then.
That's true. I mean, she knew. That's he shouted true. It at no, a rally. No, because
she was sleeping while he was saying that.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And Cash was watching it.
That's right.
So she doesn't know.
Whoops. Let's see. There's probably some trivia on this movie that's weird. This is a weird, bizarre movie.
This is a directorial debut.
Yes. I was just not... I liked it.
I liked it too, but...
But I also understand why someone might not like it.
Agreed.
Like, I'll be honest. When the horse started happening, I was like, okay, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow.
I was like, oh, that's taking quite the turn. And then when he turned into a horse person, there are definitely some moments of the movie I didn't think were great.
No, I agreed, definitely.
But
there are also some great,
moments, though. Yeah, it's like some of the moments are so good. But then there are also some really bad moments. I don't know. I think it's a pretty decent first movie.
No, I agree. And I think it's funny. I think the writing's good.
Yeah. The editing style of this?
It's
about
beautiful.
That. It's so whack and cool. It kind of, like, honestly reminds me, you know, like, Scott Pilgrim, like...
Yeah.
That editing where it's, like, that really kitschy...
Almost fantastical.
Editing, yeah. But this is like that, but imagine it, but, like, more subtle.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, Scott Pilgrim's editing, like, every single shot is, like... a layover or mm-hmm. like this is sort of similar to that. Like, okay, there's a scene specifically. I'm taking a drink of my drink.
Oh, this, yeah, I think.
Where he's sitting down and he looks to the side and he goes, "Really, man, you're just stuffing your face full of fries, really?" And then it cuts and you don't know who he's talking to. And then the scene opens back up and it's himself later that night in the bar stuffing his face with fries.
Yeah, it's the, and it's, that's, it's, I've never seen a transition like that.
Me neither. And that's how it cuts. And I was like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
It was very cool, though. It really reminded me of, like, Scott Pilgrim, but, like, less, obnoxious about it, I guess.
There were some really cool transitions, too. Like, yeah. They used, like, it wasn't consistent transitions. They mm-hmm. kind of, like, switched it up, which I
liked.
Yeah,
and, yeah, that's the thing, too, is it's, like, not every transition is crazy.
Yeah.
A lot of them are normal, but...
Some of them are just, like, the fade-ins.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot, they use the fade-in a lot.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So, at one point, Detroit wears a pair of earrings with the phrases, "Bury the rag and deep in your face." These are lyrics from The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll by Bob Dylan, which is a protest song about poor African-American women being murdered by a wealthy white man.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she makes these really cool earrings.
They're really cool.
Like, she makes these, they're like almost pop art.
What I think is, like, interesting font. Is that I don't know how I feel about any character in this movie.
No, me either.
Like, they all kind of suck.
They do.
But they also all, like... kind of don't suck. Even, like, the villain, which made horse people, I was kind of like, well, but he's so lovable.
He is. He's so likable.
Like, he literally made literal workhorses. Okay. Donald Glover was originally planned to play the role of Cassius, but was unable to do so due to scheduling conflicts with Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I really liked the guy who played Cash,
Me
though.
Too. I guess he recommended that person.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Let's see. During the bar scene, when Danny Glover's character is asked why he isn't dancing, he responds with the "I'm too old for this shit" line, made famous from his role as Roger Murtaugh in the Lethal Weapon movie franchise.
That's funny.
This movie was shot in 28 days.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I'm trying to read more. Not much. Not much. Gotta be honest. Some of it's interesting, but not really. Most of it's like,
yeah,
nothing.
But it's a really interesting movie. If you like weird stuff that kind of surprises you,
it's definitely a surprising movie.
Yes. I was not expecting it at all. I thought it was gonna, it's like, it's definitely a commentary.
Yeah.
But I was expecting it to be more clear cut, I guess.
Yes.
And just not include half horse, half human people.
Yeah. I'll definitely say, like, I mean, obviously this film is kind of about, like, the dangers of capitalism.
Yeah, definitely.
And a lot of people, I feel like, think this is, like, a race movie.
It's not.
It's not. Really not.
It's really not, no.
I mean, the theme of race is, like, definitely there, but it, I guess the if there is a racial thing, it's more about, like, you have to kind of sell out to become a... You have to
assimilate into, like, white culture or whatever.
To become, like, to be successful. And, but, like, there's a point, like, honestly, he doesn't really sell out that much.
No, it's not really that big of a point. Like, the real point is, you know,
that they're literally making
workhorses, and that's, yeah, like, what capitalism,
yes,
does when taken to the extremes.
So Boots Riley is the director.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, essentially, the initial screenplay was written during the Obama administration, and the target was never any specific elected official or movement, but more the puppet masters behind the puppets. Mm-hmm. And he said there were a few changes made because there were, like, lines in there saying, like, "Worry Free is making America great again," mm-hmm, but that was written before Donald Trump, but they had to cut it because they didn't want, people did not watch it because they thought it was, like,
yeah,
hating on Donald Trump. I'm going to read this. It says, a theme of it is false consciousness. The film's title has a double meaning, referencing the phrases used by telemarketers and its general usage when telling a person something you know they might not like to hear, such as the film's anti-capitalist message.
Mm-hmm.
According to Riley, the other side of it is that often when you're telling someone something that is different from how they view things, different from how they view the world, it feels like an annoyance or a bother, and that's where that comes from. The plot of a strike was used to reflect the need to organize people in the workplace and for workers to recognize their power. When asked on his choice to cast Armie Hammer as Steve Lift, Riley said Hammer was a lovable dude whose casting reflects the new capitalism in which the realities of working conditions are hidden, referencing lines such as, "I'm not your boss, I'm your friend."
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the, like, idea that, like, I think it's interesting. A lot of times when those corporations, like, you see this all the time now, when corporations are like, "We're woke. Like, we've got, you know, like, our ads feature Trayvon Martin because we're, you know, for racial equality." Yeah. And then it's like, they make their clothes in a sweatshop where they pay their workers 3 cents an hour.
Exactly.
And it's like that, I guess that, like, duality of, like, companies have to be woke, but they don't need to be that woke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's like how they explained how people normalize the, mm-hmm, Equisapiens so quickly, because when there's something that you can't change, you just choose to accept it, mm-hmm, because it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Squeeze does say that.
Yeah.
Where he's like, they're literally turning people into fucking monsters, man. And he's like, well, they don't know what to do about it, so they're just going to think it's cool.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, you know, actually doing anything to change it.
Too real.
Up. And the only thing that does, and in the end, it's like the only thing that does change it is that, I mean, maybe, we don't even know, but, mm-hmm, ideally, the only thing that does change people's opinions of the Equisapiens is the Equisapiens literally coming in and being, like, actual monsters.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, just tearing people apart kind of things. It's interesting.
Yeah. It's a very interesting movie.
Yeah. Good. I think it's got interesting things to say about capitalism.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was a really good commentary.
Yeah, it is a good commentary.
I thought it was pretty well thought out.
Yeah, I mean, it's wacko.
It's wacko, but
it's a wacko movie.
It was, I mean, it was pretty coherent.
Yeah, this movie is very interesting because it has so many different reviews. Like,
yeah.
Okay, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 93%. On IMDb, it has a 6 out of 10. On Metacritic, it has an 80%, and Google users, 78%. So it's, like, very...
All over the map.
I would love to see, like... I would love to read some of these, like, thought pieces on this. So, let's see. Of course, like, this movie does have some, like, weak spots, but... Yes. It has an interesting thought, I think. I'm trying to read. This is about, like, this person saying that viral fame is bad.
Interesting.
That's what the movie's trying to talk about. I don't know.
I think the movie's trying to talk about a lot of different things.
I know. But also, I don't know how bad the viral fame is. In the end, actually, the viral fame kind of helps him.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Let's see. Sorry to bother you, but can I interest you in a wild dystopian satire? this is the NY Times review. Let's see. Sorry to bother you. See some of those themes, baby. It's just so wacko.
Yeah, it's a... There are a lot of people that I'd be like, you wouldn't like this movie.
No. I definitely would understand. I definitely understand people's criticism of this, that it doesn't make sense, or that it's, like, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's certainly over the top.
Definitely.
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense. But I think that it's a serious, like... Okay, so this is from The Hollywood Reporter, and it's called Dissecting Sorry to Bother You and Its Surprises. Okay, so... It says, Boots Riley's corporate takedown veers into a direction so insane and absurd that its central metaphor about the dehumanization inherent in capitalism goes from on the nose to breaking the nose. It is revealed that New Wave slave labor mogul Steve Lift is turning his employees into horse people so they can work harder than regular humans. These equisapiens are naked, tortured, abominations that are everything evil about compromising oneself for maximum achievement. Sorry to Bother You, transformational twist, follows in the cloven footsteps of politically minded body horror and science fiction that's been around since Ovid was warning the Romans about messing with the pantheon. The film's central clash is all centered around money, jobs, and the philosophies around both. Steve Yeun's labor organizers find unexpected opposition when Lakeith Stanfield Cassius Green gets placed on the fast track to top after showing a knack for sales. This also causes a rift between he and his girlfriend, the latter of which is pretty happy with struggling for one's art as to not be a part of the corporate machine. The added element of genetic mutilation and animalistic transformation only boils these debates about labor, capitalism, and hard work over with its heightened weirdness. Without David Cronenberg's over-the-top nastiness in The Fly's complete decomposition of Jeff Goldblum, the allegory for the aging toll on the body, or the AIDS epidemic as some have read the film, wouldn't be near as potent. When taking away a person's personhood, altering it irrevocably, it has to be so intense that it stands out from the shock of the daily life that devalue us. You don't have to go big with dehumanization, especially if it's at the end. That's why The Twilight Zone's Eye of the Beholder has such an intense pig-faced impact. This is something that has been around for a long time, often riding the line between campy humor and more serious message-pushing genres of science fiction and horror. These morphs are often a punishment of scientific hubris, like when people, like Jurassic Park, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it augments a funny story about being a fish out of water, or by making that fish a werewolf, a la An American in London. Tons of animals have been used, each with their own baggage. With horses, the metaphor picks up a few undertones. It's similar to the ass transformation of Pleasure Island's Boys and Pinocchio. You want to smoke? Gamble, drinking, curse, you're going to be turned into a donkey and sold into slave labor. It's an indictment of the working class because they take part in such base activities, according to the snooty elite, that have apparently never cursed in their lives. As nothing more than beasts of burden, as pack animals that live solely to best serve the machinations of the economy. But Riley takes it a step further, setting the film in an alt-present Oakland and imbuing his transformations with a racial component on top of its economic one. When Lift recruits Green, giving him the sales pitch for Equisapiens and advocating for Green to go undercover as the Equisapien Martin Luther King Jr., it comes after putting the young man on parade. He asks for the stories of gang life and then asks for a rap performance, despite Green's refusals. Green eventually figures out what the crowd wants, just shouting the N-word to give his white audience the gross, exotic experience that they desire. The Equisapiens are all kept naked and chained, hidden in a mansion like disobedient slaves. Lift tries to entice Green with the transformation, saying he will have a horse-sized penis, in addition to being the voice of an oppressed underclass. When Green is unsure if he's already been dosed by the transformation drug, he asks Detroit if his penis has gotten bigger, rather than to say if his face is a horse face. Because if there's anything that the world of Sorry to Bother You understands about the intersection of capitalism and masculinity, it is that both are about ego above all else.
That's interesting.
Green talks to some Equisapiens, speaking in a slow, talking to an isolated tribe voice, with the punchline being that these transformed peoples are still people. The protagonist has to adjust his assumptions and his own ego, even after abandoning his success. That's how quickly the natural otherization took place. Even from someone that thought they were going to become an Equisapien. It's a smart one-off that doesn't let Green completely off the hook while strengthening the central metaphor with a gag. The unlearning period may be filled with these horse people, but it's a potent reminder that money and power go to one's head quickly and are hard to dislodge.
That's really interesting.
I know.
Another thing that we talked about while we were watching the movie is how his posture and his appearance changed throughout the film. How he kind of almost disintegrates.
Yeah, he... At first, he's already, like... It's interesting because in the beginning, he's referred to as, like, a good, articulated black man, basically. They're like, oh, he's, you know, so articulate. And then, like, as it goes on and he does the white voice, he slowly becomes, like, he mumbles more. He looks more tired. His posture gets worse. Like, it literally looks like in several scenes he's, like, strung out.
Yeah, it looks like what he's doing in his work day is just taking it out of him.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, that idea that capitalism just sucks the life out of you.
Yeah, that's true. It's very interesting. I like this movie. I think it's weird.
I think it's very weird. But I think it's surprising, and I'd never seen anything like it. And I really like the editing style.
Yeah.
And the acting is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good movie.
I know. I like it. Oh, it's a good game. We actually wanted to watch Black Klansman, and we couldn't because...
It's like $15.
Yeah, we couldn't stream it anywhere. It was going to be $15 to buy, so we were like, okay, well, we're not doing that. So we ended up like looking for a movie similar to Black Klansman, I guess. So we picked this one because we saw it come up. We were like, oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So I do have a review.
Yay.
You know... It's probably what you're going to expect from this review, but...
Oh, no.
1 out of 10. Racist movie.
Oh, no.
This film is all about how the white man is the devil, and they are all rich, evil capitalists who use people as slaves to literally turn them into workhorses. It is about how the workers of the world must unite. This film is very racist. The main character, a black fellow, uses the so-called white voice to get ahead in his business, which is answering phones. That's a real thing. The white voice.
Yeah.
It is a real thing that actually exists. It's like he says, like, it's the voice you use to talk to cops. He finds himself easily rising to the top by imitating the voice of a soulless capitalist whites as he rises up the ranks. He finds himself surrounded by white people partying and being rich, and eventually uncovers a sinister plot that the evil whites have to transform their slaves into literal horse people to work better. This two-hour propaganda features a cookie-cutter communist revolution story about the proletariats revolting against the bourgeoisie. This movie would have come out, could have come out in 1918, but not 2018. Would not recommend.
Wow, they're really cashing in on those $5 words.
Also, this movie is really not about race.
It's really not.
It is about capitalism being bad. It's really not about race.
No.
There's another black guy. I mean, I'll get granted they're mostly white, but also if to sell people stuff, you have to sound white, then you have to fit a pretty specific quota to fit in there.
Yeah.
So it makes sense there's only, like, a couple black people. Also, I mean, there are definitely, like, tones of race being important in this movie.
But that's definitely not the... But this movie's
not what it's, like, main theme.
No.
Its main theme is, like, capitalism turns people into workhorses. Also, plenty of the people that get turned into horses are white. Plenty of the people that work at Worry Free are white.
Yeah, it's not really about race.
I know. I mean, it definitely has tones of race, but I wouldn't be like, oh, the evil whites. It's like, I don't know if it, like... I mean, it's certainly some part of it is that they're white, but I don't think that's all... I don't think that's why they're turning people into horses.
No.
They're turning people into horses for money, not because they don't like black people. That's just another tone of, like, the reality of the world.
Yeah.
Honestly, the way race is treated in this movie feels pretty accurate. Like, the idea that it's like, well, you're black. What was gang life like?
And he's like,
I never was in a gang.
It was like not didn't really have any experience with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, ooh. All the other ones were like, a lot of them were like, this is a stupid movie, I don't get it. but also, this is another one, 1 out of 10, really short. Left to swill, avoid at all costs. What started as a promising film with strong acting and a pretty unique style went completely off the rails. One of the dumbest, most absurd plot twists in cinematic history, plus constant anti-capitalist, anti-white, and anti-police messages that go from not so subtle at first to shove down your throat by the end, makes this one of the worst films I've had the displeasure of sitting through. If you love mindless leftist propaganda swill, this is your movie. As a result, it's no shocker that the critics, and likely the Academy, will love it.
Ugh, I rolled my eyes, guys.
Ugh, I know. Ugh. I'm like, what?
And also, its absurdity is just part of its charm, I think.
I think so, too. I like it.
Me, too.
Here's the thing. I think it does definitely, like, start off kind of, like, vaguely absurd.
Yeah.
Like, the editing's very quirky, and you're like, ha, mm-hmm. Some of these lines, like, there's even a part... The voices of the white people are, like, overdubbed, and it's, like, horrible.
Yeah, like, there's like, obviously not them talking.
Obviously not them talking. And there's even a part, like, they reference it, you know, they, like, self-reference where he's like, you sound like you're overdubbed. It's so crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there is, like, that aspect to it, but definitely I think it does. It's not like it's serious and then turns crazy. It's kind of weird, and then it slowly gets weirder.
Yeah, you just turn up the heat a little bit slowly.
Yeah. And then when you get to the horse people, it turns up the heat a lot, and there's an explosion, and it explodes in your face. You're like, whoa. But then you settle back down again.
Yeah, yeah, you get used to it. You
get used to it really fast.
Because you can't change it.
Because you can't change it. That's the movie. The movie is there are horse people, and they look like that. Yeah. It's interesting.
It is. I really liked it, though. What would you give it?
Probably like an 8 out of, maybe a 7 out of 10, actually.
I think 7 out of 10.
It's good. It's really good. It definitely has some flaws, but, like, for a first movie, it's not bad. And no. I liked it.
Yeah. I thought...
It's original.
It is original, and I, you know, we like a good original film.
Yeah. It's definitely original. I liked it. I mean, I see why people wouldn't like it, though.
Yeah.
I don't see why those reviewers didn't like it.
No, that, they didn't like it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. It's anti-white. Is it anti-white? It's not about anti-white. It's fine. Literally fine.
Yeah, I get people being like, I don't like the horse people. I get that.
I get that. I also, it's a little much. There's a lot of horse penis. It's graphic. I'm not gonna lie.
They're very long.
Very long. It's a little, just every time I saw it, I was like, oof, I do not want to look at this. But I did. For you, the viewers, the listeners.
You're welcome.
All right, well, my drink's gone, so I guess that means this episode's over.
All right, guys. we are doing, for Patreon, Coffee and Kareem. Not that good of a movie.
Come listen to hear what we think about that.
Yeah.
Yep, donate to us on Patreon. $1 a month gets you access to absolutely everything we've ever recorded on there. And then, of course, the more you donate, the higher the tiers, the more rewards. And
you get to, you know, suggest movies and stuff.
Exactly. And plus, what else do you got going on right
so
now?
So true.
You've got that stimulus check. Give it to us. Please. We didn't get one.
We didn't get one.
Ooh. Letting your parents claim you as a dependent because you're trying to be nice, but then you get screwed over. Ha ha. All right. Have fun. Bye.
Bye.